Disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Perchi, and joining me this week for yet another just the two of us kind of a show, I guess we'll make it if we try, is Justin Sivakis. Hey, Justin.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm okay. So how have you been? What's been going on?
It's been a crazy, crazy, crazy month. I just got back from a family trip, and now I have to move. So
hooray.
And of course, I did that's a time where that everything gets busy all at once. So basically, it's the month without sleep.
Yeah, I was going to move. I was set to move into a bigger apartment on the 5th, but I pushed it out to the 15th because that's smack in the middle of preview guide. And I can't be anywhere except in front of my computer with my, you know, eyes toothpicked open like Clockwork Orange for about a week and a half during preview guide time. So, yeah, changing plans. That's right. But I've been actually watching a lot of stuff lately. But let's start with you. What have you been checking out?
Well, I finally managed to see the second and final movie to Eden of the East.
I still haven't gotten to that. How was it?
It was actually not bad. Everyone complained so much about it that I was really preparing myself for the worst.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. If there's any disappointment about it, it's kind of when the show finally does play its hand, it does reveal that it's really not quite as smart of a setup as it initially seemed to be.
Yeah, everybody told me the most damning quote that I heard, or someone said that the Eden of the East movies are about as useful and entertaining as the Matrix sequels.
Oh, come on.
Which to me was like, really?
that's fanboy. This is the worst thing ever because it's not the best thing ever.
Mm, yeah, okay.
I thought it was a satisfying conclusion without fully explaining the world and how it works, and so therefore leaving it open to sequels.
Right.
It also had something of a somewhat simplistic worldview, but it's also a worldview I happen to agree with quite a bit. So I'm just going to say, okay, you get a pass.
Without spoiling anything, I mean, how would you describe that worldview?
The baby boomers are the cause of all the world's evil.
Oh, well, yeah. Who doesn't think that?
I don't think anyone would really disagree with that. I didn't realize that was the thing in Japan, too. But then I stepped back and thought about it. And I'm like, actually, yeah.
Yeah, wow, okay. So worth checking out, you think, if you're a fan of the show.
And hate baby boomers.
And hate baby boomers, right. And are not presently...
My parents accepted.
Right, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that's good. I'll definitely check it out. It's been sitting on my shelf collecting dust for a while. I mean, my motivation to watch those kind of dropped off, because I really love the TV show, and I actually liked the ending of the TV show and was fine with it. And so the movie seemed a little like, maybe I'll get to it eventually. So I guess I will do that now.
I will say that the time gap between the release of the TV show and the movies hurts the movies because the movies are more or less long TV episodes.
Yeah.
And you lose the momentum. It's sort of like how, you know, you went to the second half of Harry Potter Part 7 and you're like, oh, crap, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, what the hell is a Horcrux again? Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah, okay. Huh. Well, they're definitely, yeah, so they're basically meant to be watched as soon as you're done with the show.
That's essentially it, although nobody has gotten to see it that way until, you know, now that everything's out. So
yeah.
Who knows? It's still worth watching, I think.
Do you think, because I liked recommending that show to people who had known about anime and been a little curious about it, and just I didn't want to, you know, send them into the deep end. So I gave them Eden of the East, and it actually was pretty good introductory anime, I found. Even though, you know, the concept of a neat is not exactly the most commonly understood thing. Do you think if you were to use the show, would you give them the movies with it?
Well, I would give them the movies anyway, sure, but if I was going to give them the show, I don't think the show makes particularly great a great gateway drug. It's a little, I mean, I guess if it prepares you for any aspect of anime, it's the impenetrable storylines.
Yeah. It
gets really confusing. It's very Japanese. I like that sort of thing, but, you know, I've been doing this for 15, 20 years.
Well, I mean, I successfully gave it to somebody who, in turn, liked it a lot and wanted to see more anime as a result. Oh. The reason I did is because I thought the show was smart and entertaining and kind of exciting and had some interesting things to say about society that weren't impenetrable. I don't, you know, obviously, like, she didn't get as much out of it as I did, but she really enjoyed it. I think it's a pretty solidly constructed show, no matter how you slice it, so.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, I mean, if you found someone that it makes a good gateway drug for, great.
Overall, maybe not so much. Yeah. Maybe not to the general public, but yeah, interesting.
It's a little challenging for the general public, yeah. I gotta say.
Anything else?
All right, well, there is one. Now, you know, my whole thing is really obscure stuff, and I will go to some links to find weird, off-the-beaten-path things, and, you know, I have to kiss a lot of frogs, as the saying is. I mean, you watch a lot of weird garbage to find the weird good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a couple years ago, Media Blasters released, completely unsung, more or less unmarketed, a one-shot sci-fi OVA that looked like a really, really bad Cowboy Bebop-ish type show called Space Travelers.
Oh, I remember this.
And it was awful. I mean, completely unwatchable. The designs were ugly. The animation was shoddy. It was just garbage. It made almost no sense. But I read a little bit about it, and, you know, I tried to watch it, and I'm like, wow, this is unwatchable garbage. Glad I just rented this. Well, it turns out it was made as marketing for a movie, a live-action movie, also called Space Travelers. And this was a huge blockbuster in Japan.
Wow. Huh.
And apparently they were intertwined and played heavily on the anime themes. So I'm like, okay. And it took me a while to find it because there are no English subtitled copies anywhere. But it turns out there is a Hong Kong DVD that has English subs. So I'm like, thank God. So I finally got it. And God, I don't even know how to describe this. It is a weird movie. It's not good, but I'm kind of in shock that this exists. The basic premise is that a ragtag group of three buddies who aren't all that bright but are kind of nice guys decide to rob a bank. And, you know, they are kind of too nice and the bank heist goes badly and the whole thing goes wrong. And suddenly they're trapped in this giant police standoff with all these hostages who are kind of warming to them slowly, but it's just kind of a bad situation. So one of them is a hardcore otaku for this terrible show called Space Travelers that, you know, was completely made up for the movie, and gets all of the hostages and all of the entire cast basically to LARP as these characters.
Okay.
And to try to fool the police for as long as possible, and they all become friends and bond over it.
That's weird.
I know. It barely makes sense. It gets by on the likability of its cast, which it has a great cast. It's got Takeshi Kaneshiro and Ken Watanabe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Watanabe, especially out of place. He's playing like a mercenary, but one who has clearly never worked out in his life. Like, his arms are like the size of a baby's arms. It's hilarious. But it's, yeah, I'm like, it doesn't really work and it doesn't make any sense, but I'm just kind of agog that A, it exists, and B, it was a huge hit in Japan.
Yeah, that's amazing. It doesn't even sound like a premise that would get greenlit.
I know, and to make matters worse, the artwork, they barely use the animation in the show or in the movie. They just keep cutting back to this terrible artwork that they had. I don't know who came up with this artwork. It certainly wasn't anyone prominent in the anime business. It is some of the worst, quote-unquote, anime-style fan art I have ever seen out of any country.
Wow.
And it was a Japanese blockbuster.
Jeez, that's weird. I wonder what the story is there. Maybe there's, like, a particular reason it was huge hit. Maybe somebody in the cast is really popular or something. I don't know.
I don't know. The whole cast is great. I mean, it has some of the best Japanese drama TV actors in it. Takashi Kaneshiro is really good in it, but I still don't know what to make of it. And the ending, just I won't give away the ending because some people may seek it out, and I kind of recommend they do just to see that it exists. But the ending, I don't get it. Japan, you continue to baffle me. Right. So yeah, that's all I've been watching. I mean, I've had my hands more than full.
Yeah, we're getting into the busy season here. But last night, I sat down and I watched two things. The first was MARDOK Scramble.
How was that?
Okay, well, it's pretty... Okay, I liked it. It's a little impenetrable. It's based on a very popular series of novels, and a manga. There's a manga for it as well. And like Brian Rell wrote a brain diving on it a couple of months ago, and I read that, and it sounded kind of intriguing. It's... Okay, so the... Let me see if I can describe the story here without fucking it up. So there's this prostitute. Okay, so it's set in like this dystopian future. And there's a prostitute who is getting involved with this guy who explains that he kills women. It's like a serial killer. He like kills women and turns their ashes into these blue diamonds that he then fashions into rings that he wears. Okay, so...
Because that's way cheaper than just buying diamonds.
Yeah, right. Well, he's a serial killer. What do you want? So apparently this guy was on being targeted by this organization, and she gets sort of caught in the crossfire and gets blown up in the sting operation to get this guy, and they don't get him, but they resurrect her as like a cyborg, like a cybernetic person with, you know, robot arms and skin and stuff. I mean, she still looks like a human being, but she's a Kusanagi type robot.
That's exactly what was coming to mind.
Yeah, exactly. So so they resurrect her and they turn her into like an agent to track this guy down. And they give her this. This is all making a ton of sense. They give her this little. It's like a symbiote that takes the form of a little mouse that can also become weapons and a gun and some kind of a shield and all kinds of different nifty stuff. And has the unfortunate name, for some reason, it is called Oafcock. I don't know why they called it. I'm sure in Japanese it sounds like Oafukaku or something. But in the English dub, they're just saying Oafcock. And it's extremely distracting because all I can think about is a big dumb guy's penis. And so the guy who originally owned Oafcock comes after her for it. And anyway, so it's sort of a weird, trippy sci-fi thing. Very dark, very violent. At one point, she's sort of being hunted by these organ harvesters who are really gross dudes that, like, graft eyeballs onto their skin and stuff. Yeah, it's super hard, super dystopian sci-fi. And I liked it for what it was. I liked it for being original and being unique and not looking like everything else out there and just kind of existing. It's kind of neat that something that's like that hard sci-fi can still get produced. It's only an hour long, and it's part one of a three-parter, and it ends on a really horrendous cliffhanger. But, you know, I'm surprised Sentai put it out. I'm happy it's out there. I will say that, like... The way it looks, it's a fairly ugly show. They're really going for... I'm sure you remember, like, in the early 2000s to mid-2000s, there was kind of a run of shows like Lane and Ergo Proxy that had this kind of ugly sort of cybernetic look to them, or, like, Technolize.
Right.
Where the chief color is this sort of neon green.
Neon green and rust.
Neon green, rust, piss yellow, and they do that really like sort of ugly thing where they sort of put a color on something and then overlay a texture on it, and it just doesn't. It looks
so. It's early decade dystopian anime.
Yes, absolutely. That's what it looks like. The animation's quite nice. The character designs are unique. It's the color palette is just very ugly. But that's intentional. Like, it's supposed to be sort of gross.
It, what you're describing sounds a lot like the 80 Police Files Something Dolls.
So
Parasite Dolls.
Parasite Dolls. Yeah, those come to mind. It's a touch harsher, I think, than those were. But I mean, you know, as I describe this, you're going to know whether or not it's something you want to seek out. So, I mean, I recommend it to people who are interested in sci-fi and just want to see something different, because it is certainly that. It's definitely different and out there. But yeah, not bad. I'm glad I got the chance to take a look at it.
Mm. So since I dubbed it.
Yes, they did dub it. It's fine. The dub is fine. It's not all completely Stephen Fosterized and rewritten. The dialogue is fine. I mean, you can't really fuck with the dialogue too much because the story is so convoluted and requires so much exposition that if you screw around with the dialogue, you're gonna not be telling the story. So it's a fine dub. There's a couple of extras on the disc, not much, and it's only out on DVD. It's not. I don't think it's either not out on Blu-ray yet in Japan or out on Blu-ray, and they don't want people to reverse import it, so they didn't give them the Blu-ray rights. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do eventually release. Maybe if the other films get made, they'll release all three of them at once or something like that.
Wonder how it did in Japan.
I know the books are really successful.
Oh.
So I can't imagine that the anime didn't sell. But it is very strange and for a very particular audience.
Oh.
But for a broader audience, the other thing I saw, speaking of long television episodes, was Trigun Badlands Rumble, which I had not yet seen, even though I had about a dozen opportunities to check it out before now. I decided to pop in the Blu-ray of that.
Now, see, I'm one of those people that with Trigun, I initially was really excited about it, then about halfway through the show lost interest and never came back.
Yeah, me too. But I was curious. And the movie takes place in between episodes 9 and 11?
Okay, so before it got all emo.
Before it got all weird. And to wit, it's a long, pretty solid episode of Trigun. It's not a great movie, but it's... Okay, I guess I'm coming at this from the perspective of every single review I read of this was damning it with faint praise and sort of backhandedly complimenting it by saying, yeah, whatever, I guess it's Trigun. But frankly, the movie, if you're a fan of the TV show, this movie gives you absolutely everything you could possibly want. Vash goofs around, you get all your favorite characters are in it for plenty of time, it's not like they don't get screen time. There's action, there's jokes, it's a Trigun movie. It's exactly what they should have made. And it's not like the show is some sort of masterpiece, so it's a totally fine movie. It's got a little bit of Shonen Jump disease where it introduces a new character and Vash falls in love with this girl who has a tie-in to the villain who was made up for this movie. But as a standalone story, it works just fine. And it's not confusing or bad or doesn't shit the bed. It's a totally fine movie. And Funimation went out of their way to really load up the DVD with lots of extra features. So there's footage from premieres and interviews and all kinds of stuff on there. More than any Trigun fan could ever possibly want. I do not know why this thing is seen as such a disappointment, but it's just fine.
And it has Johnny Young Bosch in the dub.
Yeah, right. And I mean, I know some people like just totally loved all of the voices from the original, but I don't give a shit.
Well, that's the thing. He was the only standout. The rest of that dub kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's an old dub.
Everyone else is very wooden. Yeah. I don't understand.
I mean,
I guess people get attached to old dubs no matter how horrible they were. Evangelion.
Yeah. People got into a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but a sizable number of people, I would say, got into anime through Trigun. It was a gateway drug back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And people remember that fondly. They remember watching on Cartoon Network, and that was the dub they saw, and whatever. But the movie's just fine, and the voices are better, and it's just fine. The one thing I will say that kind of weirded me out, and I don't know if I'm just seeing this because I'm a movie nerd, or I'm a weirdo, or what, but so there's a weird reference in it. Vash meets this girl, the central, you know, movie character, saves her from being raped by thugs. That is how he saves her, which is a little dark for a Trigun movie. Later on, there's a bar fight scene where she's with him, and a gang of thugs is coming at her in the bar, and she leaps up on this pinball table and starts firing. And to me, the first thing I thought of, is this a visual reference to The Accused? Like, that's the only, because it looks like the pinball machine from The Accused, and it's sort of flipping it on its head, because that's a pretty famous scene, pretty famous movie.
You know, I'll bet it is. Japanese animators are known for, you know, being movie nerds and, you know, throwing in weird stuff like that.
Yeah, it's weird for the Trigun movie.
Okay, not what I would have predicted, but, you know, I've seen movies like Used Cars referenced in anime, so.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and stick with the theory. There is a reference to The Accused in Trigun Badlands Rumble.
That's kind of awesome.
It's kind of awesome, yeah. But again, if you are a fan of that show, if you liked the show, were entertained by the show, give the movie at least a rent. If you're a fan, buy it, because you're going to enjoy yourself. It is exactly what you would want, and I don't know why you'd be expecting anything else. I mean, yeah, the world doesn't end. It's not like he's saving the universe or anything, but I don't know. I guess I don't know why you would expect that. But anyway, so yeah, Trigun movie, totally, totally fine. Yeah, that's about it. I just got my Star Wars Blu-rays.
I still don't understand why you'd buy those.
Well, okay, first of all, let me just explain. I had a gift card, so I didn't spend any cash on the Star Wars Blu-rays.
Okay, that makes it a little better.
Well, I mean, I understand all the hemming and hawing about it, but I have a very strange relationship with these films, wherein, fundamentally, I love them. At least, you know, I love A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, and the first 30 minutes of Return of the Jedi is a good movie.
Right.
But at the same time, they have become culturally so ubiquitous that I do equate them, I call them the Hello Kitty of movies, because the iconography doesn't really signify anything anymore. Putting Darth Vader's head on something is akin to putting Hello Kitty on it. Doesn't mean anything. Not a signifier. Like, that's just a generic image. And it's fascinating to me sort of as a series, how a series of films can literally just become no more meaningful than, like, a cereal box cover. Or like Toucan Sam, you know, or something like that. And so the changes that George Lucas makes to these movies, I don't give a shit. I really don't care. So long as A New Hope is 90% intact, fine. That's fine. The shitty changes doesn't bother me that much. And frankly, like, I popped it in just about an hour ago just to see how it looks. For a movie from 1979, it looks fucking phenomenal. Like, it looks great.
I have to say, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan in the world. I kind of barely tolerated them as a kid.
Yeah, 77, I should say. 77. Anyway, go.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not that guy, and I only follow Star Wars because so many of my friends do. Mm-hmm. That said, the first time I actually sat down and watched them and actually gave them a chance was the mid-90s reissues. Mm-hmm. And I liked them. I have to say, that one new audio effect in New Hope, the first time you see Obi-Wan with the whooping to scare away the sand people, that even if I was seeing it for the first time, that would take me out of it and I would be laughing my ass off.
Yeah,
that sounds like, I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it. It sounds like it's coming from a special education classroom.
Oh God, that's a horrible thing to say.
But it does. That's exactly what it sounds like. And there is no way I can watch that scene now without thinking of special ed kids.
Look, I mean, again, I think the special editions were kind of what just made me stop. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. There is movies. You can do whatever the fuck he wants to it. Because, you know, in 1997, when they reissued A New Hope, literally they just threw in giant CG dinosaurs that literally covered the entire screen for seconds at a time. During what was previously just a shot of the landspeeder going to Mos Eisley. If that's not a big enough, hey guys, I'm fucking with these movies, deal with it moment for people to just say, okay, fine, I don't care, whatever, then okay. I mean, I guess it just doesn't bug me. It's out of being jaded and touch cynical about it.
I own these movies in various formats, so I don't really feel bad about pirating them at this point.
Right.
So I was quite happy to just grab this amazing new fan restoration of all three movies and be done with it.
Yeah, I want to see that. I still haven't seen that, but I'm curious about it.
He did a meticulous job. There's a bunch of A-B shots floating around the internet, and I... I've done my share of fan restoration work, and this is well above and beyond what even I would consider doing for anything. Like, literally, he started with the new HD restoration and painted out the modifications with the old footage.
Yeah, that's really impressive. It's only it's not 1080p though, right? It's 720.
Yeah, I mean, wow. It's the old footage is coming from the old LaserDisc Master, so there's not a whole lot he could, you know, it's the happy medium.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not only that, but, you know, it's fun to make fun of the prequels. They are really, really bad movies. So
they are heinous movies, and it kind of hurts my soul that people will still buy them just because they're Star Wars canon.
Well, I mean, they really fucked with the fans on this, because the only way to get all those cool deleted scenes that have never been unearthed before, which is neat stuff from the 70s and the 80s, that I was really curious, and the big reason why I wanted the set, you can only get them in the 9-disc version. If you only buy the original trilogy, you don't get any of that stuff. So, that's yeah, just, it sucks.
God damn these people.
It sucks, but whatever. I guess I'm just so used to the fans just getting cornholed over Star Wars. It just doesn't.
You compare what Lucasfilm does to their fans and what the ridiculous bending over backwards till they're a pretzel that, like, Funimation and ADV do, or whoever's in business anymore, does for anime fans, and then you consider how much more successful Lucasfilm is, it's just, ugh.
Yeah. I mean, it's a battered wife syndrome at this point.
It really is.
I mean, and to wit, like, there's, like, every single discussion thread about the Star Wars Blu-rays that I clicked on was, don't buy these, boycott it, he made changes, boycott. And I went to pick it up today, and I got one of, like, the last two copies on the shelf, and they had a giant box of them. So, you know, it's not like people aren't going to buy them. Doesn't matter anymore. I don't understand how people can allow themselves to get upset about it. That's my thing. Like, why are you still mad about Star Wars? Like, who gives a shit? If you're in your late 20s and early 30s, shouldn't there be, like, other movies that you worship that are much better? You know, like, I would get really, really pissed off if someone made changes to, like, Days of Heaven. That I would get really mad about. Because it's fucking Days of Heaven. You don't mess with that. But Star Wars, God.
Yeah. You know, I think what this really says about us as a society is that most people have never really gotten beyond the kind of entertainment they enjoyed when they were 12.
And hey, that's fine. I don't put myself in that boat, but I still indulge in all that shit. To wit, you know, $80 Star Wars Blu-rays.
I can't say anything. I'm the one that spent $115 on Dominion Tank Police Region 2s that look barely better than the CPM ones.
Well, hey, look, we're in our 30s working with cartoons for a living, so there you go.
Yeah,
well,
clearly we're on the hill to, like, be shooting at people.
Yeah, right.
Oh, so I should mention that one of the things I've been working my butt off on this week is so we're trying something new with this season's new shows. We've been working on this thing for a while called Anime Spotlight, in which we're actually working with the Japanese studios to try to get as much information as we can possibly get about new shows as before they air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously it's a work in progress, and we're not getting every studio working with us right off the bat. I mean, it's a lot of additional work for them too. But more or less what we're going to be presenting for 5 new shows this season is exactly what you would have gotten had you bought New Type from Japan and been able to read Japanese.
Right.
So we have really nice artwork, we have character guides, and we have a very thorough synopsis and more or less full cast and crew details for 5 shows. And we'll be rolling those out slowly over the course of the next week.
Yeah.
And we have subtitled trailers.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, my part of that is interviews. And so for this fall season, I'm interviewing the director of the new Hunter x Hunter, the guy who wrote the Fate Zero novels, and the director of Production IG's new show, Guilty Crown. I have no idea what that show is even about, so I get to do some research before asking questions. But yeah, no, that's like my off season is now all interviews with directors of shows that are premiering in the new season.
Those sound like really fascinating interviews, especially the first one.
Hunter, I'm really curious how that's going to play out.
Exactly. That's why I really want to hear, because I was a fan of the original, even though I didn't think it was, you know, anything wonderful. It was one of the shonen shows that I thought followed the trope exactly and did a very nice job with it until it petered out towards the end.
Yeah, well, they're just rebooting the whole thing. They're not picking up where it left off. They're starting from the very beginning, which is probably smart given how many hiatuses that manga goes on.
Well, that and the old anime, it looks old. It's a late 90s show and looks like it.
It screams late 90s. And that was actually one of my questions for him was, this looks like 1998. The character designs are very 1998. Did you consider modernizing the look of the show? And the character designs on the splash page for the new show look a bit updated. But still, that main character with that green spiky hair.
Gone.
Very 90s. Yeah. Super 90s.
I'll admit, I'll be watching it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it turned out.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to Ungo, I think it's pronounced. Which is, it's the Noitanima show this block,
this
season, mm-hmm. And it reunites Sho Aikawa with Seiji Mizushima.
Oh, cool.
So, but that said, the premise doesn't really appeal to me all that much, and I'm dying to see it just to see what those two will do.
What is the premise?
Detective and his annoying, girly, little boy underling solve crimes in weird dystopian future and get pretty much put upon by the public at large.
All right, then.
Yeah, it doesn't sound all that appealing, right?
I'll cross my fingers for some political metaphors.
That would be my hope. and it sounds ripe for it. And, hey, it's Sho Aikawa, so I'm sure they will be jammed down our throat.
Yeah, of course.
And we'll portray America as the bad guy, which, well, hey.
We are. What do you want? all right, let's do Twitter. Because we got a ton of Twitter questions here. Wayne01 asks, what are your favorite animation studios? I assume he means Japanese.
You know, I've kind of given up playing favorites, especially because I have to work with each of them and they all have their quirks. But, and every one of them completely falls and face plants every couple seasons or so. So you can't really, I've given up keeping score and being fans of certain studios. I've just kind of let the work speak for itself.
Yeah, I've certainly stopped judging them based on what they produce every season, because you never know if it's just work for hire or if somebody at the studio is their pet project. I will admit, like, when I see Bones' name on something, I generally get a little bit more curious about what it is. And same with still with Gainax, even though Gainax has plenty of stinkers and not necessarily really worth the extra attention, but it's just habit at this point.
I was going to say Gainax's batting average is actually probably lower than your average studio.
I think so, yeah. But still, I can't help it. It's just like, oh, Gainax is doing something. Well, I wonder what this is. You know, for whatever reason, it sparks a little bit more curiosity in me than a lot of other studios. It'll be
interesting, even if it's a steaming train wreck.
Yeah, right.
To mix metaphors entirely there.
And when Sunrise is producing something that is not a giant robot show.
Right.
Generally.
Although their show this season is called Phi Brain, in addition to Gundam Age. And both shows look good, potentially interesting, but I can't really be sure about Phi Brain because it's a really simplistic plot and it's clearly meant for, 12-year-olds.
Are you saying thigh brain or phi brain?
Phi brain, P-H-I brain.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
Yeah, it's a puzzle-solving shonen action show.
All right.
So.
Okay, then.
Not normally the sort of thing I would, wait for each episode with bated breath for.
Yeah. All right. Jared Nelson asks, what factors should you consider when choosing between buying a Blu-ray or a DVD of a series or movie?
You buy the Blu-ray.
You buy the Blu-ray. I guess this is the whole, it's not worth buying Blu-rays if it's just an upscale thing.
Well, Blu-rays are usually cheaper these days.
They're cheaper and,
Or you get both.
With a few very rare exceptions, the Blu-ray's going to look better. So, yeah.
Those are very rare exceptions. And even then, if the Blu-ray looks worse, it's usually most people won't be able to tell.
Very true. The response to those Dragon Ball screenshots we had was sort of baffling to me. It's always a little bit baffling because it's people like, I can't tell any difference between DVD and the Blu-ray. And it's like, are your eyes broken? What is wrong with you? It's six times the resolution. Anyway.
Well, to be fair with Dragon Ball, that six times the resolution isn't really going to add much in the way of detail.
No, but I thought the new ones looked, they were akin to, you know, this is how it was originally presented, and it's very sharp.
Oh, absolutely. So. And it's way better than how it was originally presented. It was originally presented over analog television.
Yeah, yeah, really. They should add in a special feature on the Blu-ray where you can turn it on and it'll be like, it's if you're watching it with rabbit ears on like an old Zenith or something.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, over the end credits, they're teasing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reruns or something.
Syndicated Full House, yeah. All right. Kaidan 1364 asks, best magical girl parody, Dokuro-chan, Punie-chan, or a secret third option the world must know? As not being a fan of really either of those, I couldn't really tell you. I thought Dokuro-chan was funnier than Punie Punie Poemi.
Yeah, no, it's not Punie Punie Poemi. It's Magical Witch Punie-chan.
Oh, okay. Sorry, getting my stupid poon names. Getting my dumb shit mixed up. Sorry. Anyway, not being a fan of, I've never seen Magical Witch Punie-chan.
It's similar to Dokuro-chan, but it's darker. I also don't think it's as funny, but I'm a huge Dokuro-chan fan. But I bought the DVD. I'm not sure I'll ever watch it again, but I'm happy to have it.
So, in your opinion, it's Dokuro-chan.
Yeah, but I'm thinking there has to have been a better magical girl send up over the years. There's been so many.
Pretty Sammy. that barely counts because they just turned it into a magical girl show.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not a send up. That's just, let's saw all the corners off this square peg and fit it into this round hole.
Yeah. Nothing's really coming immediately to mind in terms of being quote unquote better. But in the early part of the last decade, there was a ton of that shit.
Yeah, but so many of them were not actually parodies, and they were exactly what Pretty Sammy was. And just, you know, let's make this into a magical girl show and make it somewhat tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, something being even slightly tongue-in-cheek or on the nose, people call it a parody now. So, like, there's nothing that's intentionally bad. It's all parody. It's like, nope, it's just a shitty show.
Well, not to mention, you know, the slightly tongue-in-cheek magical girl stuff. I mean, that was one of the first things I watched, Devil Hunter Yoko.
Oh, yeah. That's
almost more prominent to me than the magical girl genre itself.
Yeah, I've still never seen Devil Hunter Yoko.
You're not missing anything.
I know. All right. Angel X03 says, quick off-topic question, why don't you like any of the USA original series like Burn Notice?
I actually never watched most of them. It was just something easy to goof on.
Yeah, it's just easy to make fun of. I don't watch that stuff because I don't watch any procedural shows, cop shows. If it's about cops, spies, doctors, or lawyers, the odds that I will give a shit and want to watch it are pretty much zero. I watch almost no hour-long television that is not AMC or HBO.
Actually, a good friend of mine works for USA Networks and is actually a higher-up in supervising their original shows.
Yeah.
So I was more laughing at those just to goof on him.
Right. Well, I'm goofing on because they're easy to make fun of, and they're white noise shows. I mean,
yeah, I did actually try to watch, watched two. I watched Psych, which I don't mind. But yeah, it's a white noise show, and I think I was just channel surfing once and I caught an episode of Royal Pains, which I thought was actually painful.
Look, having had to sit through the Covert Affairs panel at Comic-Con, I pretty much have PTSD as a result of that shit. So, no thank you. Anyway, everyone tells me Psych is good. I've seen some clips. It seems okay. I'm probably never going to watch it, but
it's mildly amusing. I hesitate to call it good.
Yeah, well, at any rate, we're just making fun of shit. So, there you go. those shows have a ton of fans, though, so anyway.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And good for you, and enjoy your life. all right. Razuel asks, he's interested in what you've been reauthoring. since he just got into reauthoring his own DVDs and Blu-rays.
Well, the last thing I did was I just discovered that the UK release of Wicked City had a different dub. So I got the Region 2, and it already had the streamlined dub in there, so I added the UK dub, and a friend of mine had subtitles, so I added subtitles, and so, yeah. Wicked City.
Okay, Wicked City.
And that Venus Wars Blu-ray, I think, was the thing I did before that.
Oh, yeah, how did that look?
Well, the show itself was shot on a pretty thick-grained film, so it wasn't exactly a reference Blu-ray. It was, you know, kind of globby-looking. But it was a huge upgrade over the CPM disc, that's for sure.
Mm. Man, it's been forever since I've even seen a minute of that.
It's very Jerry Bruckheimer.
Mm. All right. Crazy Dave asks, has there ever been an anime that has made you rage more than any other?
Yes. That would be Legend of the Dragon Kings.
What are you talking about? It's a classic.
I literally was revamping the subtitles for the CPM DVD, and when it hit the ending, I'm going to give it away. Spoiler. It was all just a dream.
How clever.
I literally leapt up from the seat and started shouting at the subtitle workstation.
That's excellent.
At work.
Jesus.
What about you?
I mean, I've mellowed out a lot over the last, like, 10 years. If you'd asked me this question even 5 years ago, I probably would have said, like, yeah, Lucky Star. Just because of what it represented. Not so much that it was the worst thing in the world, but just what it represented and what anime was becoming, you know, cute girls pandering to otaku, yawn. But now, no, not particularly. I mean, I see bad shit all the time, but nothing that actually makes me angry. It's been a long time since I've let something like a bad anime actually make me angry.
I was really angry at Metropolis.
Oh yeah, Metropolis sucked.
It was such a missed opportunity because the core story was good. The screenplay had promise, but it needed a few rewrites. But the directing was such a sloppy mess that it really diminished, I thought, the whole emotional undercurrent of the movie. A lot of people have a strong connection to it, and I just don't get it.
Maybe one day you'll get to tell Rintaro yourself.
We had him at Big Apple Anime Fest for the premiere, and I spent the entire con avoiding him.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, I found it really hard to even respect him after that, because we had an interview that we did with him that we threw on the special BAF DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And whereupon he basically admitted that Tezuka didn't really like it and never wanted it animated, and so Rintaro had to wait for him to die so he could make it.
Classy.
And I just thought, you know, how would you respond to that other than, fuck you?
Yeah, really, that's a really shitty thing to say. Wow. Okay. Redneck Otaku, what do you think the future of anime fandom will be? I would like a press view on this. I think it will continue to exist, and if not grow, then stay the same. I mean, I don't know. Predicting the future of a fandom seems... I mean, it's not like there's an end to it. It's like you can predict the future of Harry Potter fandom is die-hard fan fiction writers, and that's pretty much it. But anime just goes on forever. So, you know, unless there's a marked decline in production, I don't think it's really going to change that much.
If you look at the industry, television internationally seems to be stabilizing. It's not quite the precipitous, oh my God, sky is falling, that it was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's happening in Japan too. People are, you know, pretty much, they tried the cord cutting, and some people are still cord cutting, but it's more out of economic necessity, not because it's any better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think things will probably stay pretty much the way they are unless the sky falls in on the economy again, and which looks like it might happen any minute now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if he's talking about, like, trends in fandom, I mean, who knows? It's impossible to predict what the next thing is.
Who knows what grotesque fetish Japan will consider mainstreamable next?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't go to, like, babies or animals or something.
I'm hoping for necrophilia. I think that'd be hilarious to have that on t-shirts.
I'm sure they've already
have
gone
dead body hug pillows.
God, I'm sure that exists. 100% positive.
I'm sure it does.
It's just not. It just hasn't been accepted into mainstream anime fan culture yet. Or what counts as mainstream.
I'm sure we'll find Rigor Mortis-chan at some convention in another couple years.
God. I just keep thinking, like, message board comment, like, the best part is when they void their bowels.
Oh, this is some gallows humor.
All right. Lacuna Craft asks, what parts do you like about fandom? There's too much focus on the bad, although the bad is really bad. What's great about anime fandom?
I like that the people that anime attracts tend to be the intellectually curious, the open-minded to a point. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their thing. And people, once you meet them face-to-face, I mean, everyone's an asshole on the internet. That's just kind of universal. But once you meet them face-to-face, they tend to be extremely friendly, welcoming, open people.
Yep, that's my experience. In person, anime fans are friendly, you know, maybe a little socially awkward, but that's not a universal. And they're just good folks. They're nice, you know. They're nerds. I mean, and nerds are assholes on the internet, but in person they tend to be all right, you know.
Well, the funny thing is, I've slowly realized that it's not just nerds that are assholes on the internet. Now everyone's mom is an asshole on the internet too.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
And they type in all caps.
I mean, just all you got to do is just look around Facebook a little bit. And Facebook has become like the place for everyone to be as bigoted and horrible as they possibly can in public with their name and picture attached to it. I mean, some of the quotes that I see, because, you know, you go to a forum I go to, it occasionally has like a worst of Facebook thread.
Oh my God.
And some of the stuff is just insane. But that's the general public.
Did you watch Kino's Journey?
I saw like the first half of it.
Okay, there was an episode where Kino goes to a magical land where everyone can hear everyone else's thoughts, and it just kind of cripples everyone and makes them all shut-ins because no one could deal with each other because everyone else was such an asshole when they're unfiltered. That's the internet.
Yeah, pretty much.
So everyone is like that, and everyone is unfiltered, so I've just kind of learned to accept it.
Anyway, we should move on here.
Yeah.
Modern Rocker asks, is there a filmmaker, alive or dead, that you think would make a great animated film or show? In his opinion, Guy Madden.
Yeah, there's such different processes. I don't think they cross over that easily.
No, that's the thing. And like all my favorite directors, the one that I can point to that, yeah, he would make a really great animated movie, already did, and that's Wes Anderson, who proved that he's actually better in stop motion than he generally is in live action. And I'm a huge fan of his.
That's definitely for sure.
Well, I'm a huge fan of his live action stuff, but Fantastic Mr. Fox was probably his best movie overall, and he's great at animation. So it's hard for me because, like, you know, my other favorite directors, you know, Terrence Malick, Darren Aronofsky, P.T. Anderson, especially P.T. Anderson, my favorite director. I don't really care to see them work in animation. I don't think that's where their best work is going to be done.
Yeah, I mean, just the process of how you find a film is so entirely different in animation.
Yeah.
I just don't see them working.
It's a completely different talent. It's a completely different skill set. It's just not the same thing. Although I have to say, if the Coen brothers decided to make an animated movie, I would be very intrigued.
Oh, intriguing, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's still the Coen brothers, but we don't know what we would get.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have no idea how decent it would be. I would say that I'm kind of surprised the Wachowskis haven't tried their hand at a full-length animated feature. It seems like it would be natural since their stuff is already kind of like that. I don't know. I think it's such a different skill set. It's hard to say, like, oh, this guy would make a good one.
As is proven again and again by anime directors trying and failing miserably to make good movies.
Right. There you go. Okay. Nikki Negative. Is there a non-budgetary reason related to digital animation that things like the Suits and Tiger and Bunny, for example, need to be CG?
Well, if you watch the Sunrise Studio tour, it's the suits are CG because they were trying to aim for a wider world audience, and they wanted to go, you know, go for people that were raised on Pixar movies.
Yeah.
That and because they had to swap out corporate logos, it just made the workflow way, way, way easier.
Yeah, you know, that stuff's hard to animate by hand.
It really is.
One of the big reasons Redline is so goddamn impressive looking is because they did it all by hand, and that looks revolutionary now.
Yeah.
So, you know, the machine, I admit, I don't really like the way the CG machines look in anime. I think they look out of place and awkward, but that's really hard to do by hand and easier on the
computer.
They're
doing a better job these days. It used to be way worse.
It is much better now, to the point where I didn't really find them all that distracting in Tiger and Bunny. But, yeah. So, I mean, it's easier and, I believe, cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Depends on what they're doing, but depends, yeah, just workflow wise, it just makes more sense in certain situations.
Okay. NeoCloud9, thoughts on whatever the hell licensing rights Tango Stu Levy's doing with Italia. For people who don't know, Stu went on Facebook and said, "Hey, do you guys want me to release Volume 3 if I could?" And of course, 1,000 people said yes, and so now he's toying around with it. I think this is shitty. For the simple fact that Tokyopop had a handful of popular series that only had one volume left to go. Like, Alice in the Country of Hearts had one volume left. And he's talking about Hitalia, which has many volumes left, because that's the one that he's hitting the money pinata, basically.
Right. And the licensor will still return his calls.
Right, exactly. And, you know, to wit, in my heart of hearts, it's business. Stu owns it. It's his every goddamn right to do whatever the hell he wants with it to try and make a buck. That's what business is about. But I still think, just in terms of karma, I think it's shitty.
Yeah, I'm of the same view. And whatever his goals are, I think what's insulting is that his goals clearly don't involve anime fans. They don't involve continuing to give anime fans what they want, manga fans.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to see this as anything but using them.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And because it's so boldly, it's just so blatantly that, it seems gross.
Yeah.
Exploitative. Okay. Daniel Briscoe says, discuss the do's and don'ts of anime blogging or reviewing, what's wrong, right, and the kind of stuff ANN looks for in reviewers and reporters, etc. Okay, well, that's kind of a big question, but I can boil it down to simply easy to work with, professional, and on time. That's kind of what I look for in a writer. And professional means you're a good writer, you don't give me a lot of shit, you don't act like your prose is untouchable by an editor, you get your stuff in on time. That's really important. I mean, that's generally what we look for, people who are good at what they do. That's, you know, there's a series of unquantifiable qualities in there. You know, I have to like your writing. It has to flow. It has to seem like good writing to me. But that's kind of it. We also look for people who want to do nothing with their lives but work.
We wouldn't ask anything of you. We wouldn't do ourselves.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, yeah, because it's such a small company with this tiny little staff, everybody works a lot. So you got to be a hard worker. And that's not to pat ourselves on the back, just due to the fact that I generally routinely work 60, 65 hours a week. That's pretty normal for me. One of the things that I really look for is a very strong desire to make sure you have the facts right. Oftentimes, when I'm reading a review and it's about a particular show that I haven't seen, I will not know if you got the names right or not. And I shouldn't have to worry about whether or not you got the names right. So that's really important. Like, I need to be able to trust that you know exactly what you're talking about, because if there's a lot of material that we cover, and I really have to be sure that you know what the names are, because I might not have read volume 8 of whatever and don't know that character that you're talking about. And I can't really be expected to know every character in every anime and every manga. So I got to be sure that you know what you're talking about. That's really important. And a lot of people get that shit wrong. So, Ben the Bear, if you had to make an anime series, what would you create if given your studio of choice and unlimited funds?
Oh, man.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Actually, I do have a dream project that I did actually come up with for a friend of mine to pitch to a TV network.
Mm-hmm.
And as I rolled it around, I came up with something amazing that would be horrifyingly unproducible.
Okay.
Because it involves the FBI training, or the FBI getting a class of sixth graders to raise a bunch of adorable mascot animals that once mature turn into WMDs.
Okay.
So the way I had it, by episode six, you know, these 12-year-old kids were turning into, like, suicide bombers.
All right.
Unproducible.
Justin Savagas, ladies and gentlemen.
It's no secret what I'm into. Children suffering.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, not really. I don't know. I mean, if that situation were presented to me, I would sit down and burn the midnight oil trying to come up with something great. But who knows if I could. So, there you go.
And as for the studio, honestly, the director and the staff that you get is probably more important than the studio itself, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would wait for Miyazaki to die and then remake Princess Mononoke. I don't know.
Right. With furries.
Yeah. Except this time, San is a magical girl from...
Lots of panty shots.
And she's 12. Yeah. Okay.
12 and horny.
God damn it. Omadan asks, I'd like to know your thoughts on group viewing and how it influences both public and personal perceptions of anime. It says, as an example, there are certain shows like Infinite Ruvius where I don't think a collective experience helps them at all.
What does he mean by collective experience?
Just watching it with a group, I guess.
Oh. I don't do that enough to really...
I mean, I like watching movies, big anticipated anime movies, with the premiere crowd. That impacts my viewing of it. Doesn't impact my opinion of the film, but it definitely makes it more fun when people are hooting and hollering and cheering for their favorite characters and stuff. Like,
right.
That's just fun.
Yeah, it's generally comedies that work like that.
Comedies and franchise movies where right. people cheer because Sasuke showed up or whatever.
Fun things.
Yeah, stuff like that. When the audience is really into it, it's good. I don't know. It's been years since I went to like an anime club and watched a TV show with a group of people.
Yeah, I can't remember even remember the last time I saw an anime with a big group.
Yeah, I don't think there are shows that would be enhanced by group viewing or be better, unless it's a really, really bad show and everyone's kind of making fun of it or laughing derisively, then it can turn a miserable show into an amusing experience. But I think that's kind of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the big body stuff that I think would work. Like Dokuro-chan, which we mentioned earlier, I think would be great with an audience.
Yeah, big comedies like that. I think that's accurate. And talking only about anime, yeah, I think that's accurate.
I just remember when I saw American Beauty at the theater, I got so angry with the audience because they were laughing at things that were clearly not meant to be funny.
Oh, I think that happened to me too, but I saw that. DreamWorks had a big promotional push for that where they were taking it around to colleges before it came out.
Oh, that colleges, really?
Yeah, and I was that was 2099. So that was my second that was like my second year of college. And I saw it in a big auditorium packed with fucking 19-year-olds.
I cannot imagine a worse crowd for that movie.
I still love that movie, goddammit. I don't know why it gets so much hate.
I don't dislike it. It's just so over the top is all. It's
very entertaining.
it's a big, wah, I'm an American and I have too much money and kind of suck. Wah.
Yeah. Yep, pretty much. But it's very entertaining. Okay. Ted of Werner asks, I recently looked up an old Answerman column from 2007 where a fan asked about what the best anime podcasts are. You mentioned that you and Justin were toying with the idea of an ANN podcast, but wouldn't work because there are many similar podcasts out there. My question is, what made you want to do the podcast afterwards, and did you think it was going to work?
Self-indulgence?
I thought about, I got this question, I thought about it a little bit, and I think maybe when we were first toying with the idea of doing this, it was 2006, maybe? I want to say.
Yeah.
And we were both in very different places then. And I just don't think we were ready to try and do this. And when we started it, it's because we had, we just wanted to.
Right.
I think it started as kind of a lark. It's like, oh, let's give it a shot,
And we both clearly really like doing it.
Yeah, we both clearly really like doing it and really wanted to do it. And, at first I purposefully set it up where it didn't matter if it worked or not. I really, at the beginning of this, was like, look, this is just for fun. It doesn't matter if it goes anywhere. And you know, we've been very lucky and very, and it's been a big success, and I love doing this show. So, I mean, initially I tried to shield myself from the possibility of failure by insisting that it didn't matter. And if it hadn't gone anywhere, or if people didn't tune in, I mean, I probably would have been a little pissed off, or not pissed off, but you know, felt like a failure.
For the most first 6 months, you didn't even want to hear the numbers.
No, I didn't, and that's because I felt like it shouldn't matter. And it now it's proven to be a bigger success than we could have ever even hoped for. And really appreciate the fact that people listen to the show. I'm humbled by it, really. So initially, no, I probably in my heart of hearts didn't think it was going to work, and it did. So yay. All right. At least I think it did. So yay. V Guy asks, basically, he went to Closing Borders and they had a bunch of dusty old anime sitting in the back room that they put out on the shelves. And I guess he snapped it all up. And he wants to know that as a side result of Borders closing, there might be renewed interest in retro anime. No. There's no correlation between what happened to you and retro anime suddenly becoming popular again.
Certainly didn't happen when Suncoast closed, and that was a hell of a lot more DVDs.
Yes, it was. All right. Zaruda, our buddy Daniel Zelter, asks, how do you feel about a live-action Kite and Golgo? Is Hollywood finally adapting anime and manga properties, which makes sense?
Well, Kite would certainly be a lot easier to adapt into something that can be taken seriously than, say, Dragon Ball.
Yeah, that's true. I think those are both good ideas. I could see them both working. Although, Golgo, in my head, will always be a very stern-looking Japanese man. So, I'm not sure how much I could buy the concept of, say, Ryan Reynolds as Golgo 13.
Well, that would just be a bad movie.
Yeah, that would just be bad.
I don't know. The one thing about Kite that I really loved was the mood and the surrealness of it. So whatever they do, if they can keep that, that's kind of all I really need. The rest of the story is pretty much, you know, humdrum, been, you know, done several hundred times by Hollywood anyway. So
yeah, exactly. So I think those are good choices. I think they make sense. But I also think Cowboy Bebop kind of makes sense. So whatever. I'm pretty open-minded about that sort of thing. All right. Also from V-Guy, what's your current generalized assessment of the state of the industry? Yet another. I think things are okay. I don't know. No dramatic. There hasn't been any dramatic anything in the last, besides Tokyo Pop.
Yeah. Everyone's just working their ass off and just trying to keep things going and for the most part succeeding.
Plugging along, trying to make a dollar and a cent.
Yeah.
And sometimes.
Just like everyone else.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Things seem to be okay, I think, is basically what we're getting at. All right. Alan Zabarro asks, Justin measures his collection and SKUs. Why do you have a barcode scanning system for lending things out? And how do you measure and track your video collection?
Actually, yes. There is a great, well, okay piece of software for Mac called Delicious Library. And it actually uses your webcam as a barcode scanner.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That said, I don't really keep the discs in their package anymore. I have all the inserts filed away, and I don't really lend discs out anymore because too many of them are getting hard to replace.
Oh, yeah.
So, but the using SKUs as a tracking system is just the easiest way to library and catalog everything and kind of a holdover from my days working retail.
My collection is nowhere large as yours. I just use shelves still.
Right. You've got me on the run, overall size-wise.
I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe. You have those giant DJ cases that are like hundreds and hundreds of discs.
Yeah, I think I'm around 600 discs, or 1,600 discs right now.
I think if I counted everything, like all my TV, DVD, Blu-ray, I'm probably at like 350, maybe 400.
That's it, really?
Yeah, that's it. I've pruned it down, and I stopped buying a lot of... if it's a TV show that is not a comedy that I will rewatch, I don't buy it. And previously I had a lot of shit like Battlestar Galactica and Lost and all that stuff, but I got rid of all that because I'm never going to rewatch it. And movies, it's pretty much down to new releases at this point.
I just buy the stuff I love, and and the stuff that I'm worried that I'll want to rewatch and the rights will be tied up or out of print or something, which I guess is a lot of stuff.
I mean,
it just kind of adds up. It, yeah.
Right now, like this particular month is pretty bad, just in terms of having to buy a bunch of shit. Because in the same month, like yesterday or on Tuesday, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou came out, and Citizen Kane on the same day. And coming up in two weeks, we've got two movies I have to have, Pulp Fiction and Pee-wee's Big Adventure, on Blu-ray on the same day. So it's getting back up there. Like, I am buying a lot more catalog shit.
October is going to be a rough month for me because a couple of my favorite movies of this last year, actually, both Tree of Life and Bridesmaids, there's a pair of discs, are coming out within the next couple of weeks. And then we have a bunch of old classics, too, like some Criterion stuff and Cinema Paradiso. So I'm, it's a bad couple of months to be a Blu-ray fan.
Yeah.
Or a good couple of months.
Bad if you don't have any money.
Right.
Which I presently don't, so I'm kind of pissed off about that.
Yeah, I'm having horrible buyer's remorse because I was just with my family in Vancouver, and they have this tea shop, this really high-end tea shop that's actually a Singaporean chain, and this is the only one in North America. And I ended up buying this ridiculously expensive Japanese green tea blend. It was like 500 grams, which is a little bag, for $150.
Jesus.
It looks really pretty when it's being brewed, but I have to tell you, I don't taste any difference.
That sucks, dude.
I am having horrible buyer's remorse on that one.
$150 for tea? What are you thinking?
This particular brand of tea, type of tea, I'd only heard about before, spoken in hushed tones.
Okay, so it's one of those legendary things you just gotta try.
Yeah, and you know what? Fuck everyone.
Often the case when you're like, wait a minute, who pays $150 for coffee or whatever? And you're like, oh, idiots.
Of which I now am one.
Well, no, but you're just, it's not like you're devoted to it now and are pretending that it tastes amazing and you're just gonna keep buying it. I mean, you just had to try it, you know.
The $16 stuff they sell at the Japanese grocery is just fine.
Yeah. All right. Wolf Among Nobles asks, have you been watching Archer on FX? It's like James Bond on acid. I'm loving it. And what do you think of the new Thundercats? I'm late to the party on Archer, but I did finally start watching it, and it's really funny. I don't know why I was hesitant to give it a try, but it is really, really funny, and I'm really liking it. I'm getting through season two now.
I was really late to the party, too, and once – actually, Robin recommended it to me, and I marathoned it, and I am a diehard fan now.
Yeah, really good stuff.
What's the lead actor's name?
John Benjamin.
John Benjamin. I cannot hear his voice anymore without thinking of Sterling Archer.
He's in a lot of shit, too.
I know. It's ruined a lot of programming for me.
Yeah. His sketch comedy show is kind of meh.
Yeah, I was trying to watch it. I was like, well, I like the idea of some of this stuff, but it's not good.
Yeah, it wasn't. I was not really a fan. Fan of his, not necessarily a sketch comedy. Nope. And I have not watched Thundercats because I don't give a shit about Thundercats.
Likewise.
All right, Braves 133. In light of the Rokubu t-shirts, what are some of the other most embarrassing and shameful anime merchandise you've seen worn in public? Easier to answer the question, what anime merchandise worn in public didn't look embarrassing? Remember those Goku flame shirts?
Oh, God, those were everywhere.
The giant Sanosuke silk shirt.
God, that was awful.
Or those Lucky Star shirts.
Those Lucky Star shirts were the most embarrassing. And I don't know that anyone was dumb enough to wear them outside of an anime convention. But even at an anime convention, I'm like, you know, call me an asshole, but I can't help but judge you.
I mean, they were all doing it, quote unquote, ironically.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, wear something like that, not ironically, but yeah, there's nothing appealing about seeing someone in one of those shirts. Nothing.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up. Thanks for coming on and shooting the shit.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. Check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. And while you're there, leave us a rating or a little review. We'd appreciate it. And hey, see you all next week.